Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals, improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome back to Learning Insights and that rather upbeat intro. What do you think about that, Lee?
It is hip. It's a little hip for me.
Well, we'll have to find out in a little while what our Keystone sponsor Trading Pros and that group think of it. I kind of like it. I'm impressed. Thank you, Kevin, Trevor, whoever put that together.
And it was great that we were able to get Steve Capon to do the rap.
Yeah, thanks,
there.
Steve.
I thought that worked out really well.
That was really nice. This is going to be a fun show. It is our inaugural show. This is the first one in the series, right?
That's right.
Just getting this thing kicked off, brought to you by Training Pros, also our power partners over there at ASTD. So we're going to have a lot of fun. A little bit later in the program, we're actually going to be visiting with Leanne Langford, our buddy over at Training Pros. But first up, on the top of the show here, we have with a senior instructional designer with ADP, Automatic Data Processing, Jenna Kay. Welcome to the show, Jenna.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, we are delighted to have you. What exactly is it that a senior instructional designer does to put food on the table? What do you do every day?
I work with Employer Services, which is a division of ADP. We support the sales teams at ADP and all the different business units. And our job is to find out what behaviors the business units need to see to adapt to the current marketplace and find ways to train them on the knowledge and the behaviors that they need to spin on a dime.
Well, God love you, because I can tell you from experience, salespeople are hard-headed.
They can be. It is the same brick wall day after day. That's true.
So when you're working with a salesperson, like how much of your time is spent kind of gathering the research to kind of prove your point to get them to modify their behaviors?
Not a ton, to tell you the truth. I think ADP, we're very fortunate that there's an environment of learning. They strongly support learning. There are tons of programs rolled out every day, so it keeps me in the Cheerios. It keeps me busy. And the senior leaderships at all of the business units, they have a high opinion of the training department. They understand the need for ongoing performance improvement, and so they support us. So usually it's a story, it's statistics. There's always a grabber or something that helps us to get them to buy into understanding that a change is needed.
So you do genuinely have line managers. You have the lines of business in your corner and really supporting your efforts. Let me tell you why I'm asking. At every conversation I've ever been in that has two or more learning professionals in it, there's always that phrase that has something to do with getting a seat at the strategic table or getting the lines of business behind what we're doing. It sounds like you've pulled it off.
Yeah, we're almost there, I would say. There's still some room for growth in the strategic partnership area, and that's on a senior management level. But the leaders are, I think, when they initiate a learning project, it's because they've recognized that there's a need there and they identify it. What we're trying to do is move even past that, from not just responding to a need that they have identified, but right, helping to identify a need for them.
And so, then how do you go about doing that?
Well, that's a really good question. We're not there yet, but we have all of our senior leadership and learning actually has sales background, has operations background. And so they know what it takes to be successful in the marketplace. And so then it's a matter of just working really hard with a lot of senior executives and letting them know what we understand and being in front of them in terms of what's changing in the marketplace.
So let's back up for just a moment, if we might, and talk to a little bit about what it is that ADP, what are these folks selling and who are they selling it to?
ADP provides human capital management services, which, for most people, that just means absolutely nothing. But
yeah, but I nodded like I knew what you were talking about, right?
That's a smart thing to do, and that's what most people do. But human capital management means for a business who has to have employees, everything from hiring, looking for and hiring that employee all the way through their retirement or termination, if the case may be, all of those processes that have to take place to make sure you get the right person, you pay the right person, you provide them their benefits, you train them, grow them, develop them, and then once it's time for them to move on, you provide the services related to that.
So now companies, I guess, of a certain size are outsourcing that to ADP?
Yes, that's right. Anywhere from a company with 1 to 5 employees all the way up through your mega conglomerate global leadership.
So companies. You serve all size companies?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we do.
And then so it must be tricky from a sales training standpoint to create messaging that makes sense for all size companies. So you have to customize that messaging and those tactics.
Yeah, we sure do, because the different business units operate very differently. They're structured so that they support a certain size organization,
right,
or they provide a certain type of solution. Actually, as a sales trainer, I support all of those salespeople,
wow,
no matter which what business unit, what products they sell, how many people they sell to. So every project that I get is extremely different.
So I want to hear about this Zen for instructional design. That's really what caught my eye when I knew we were going to get a chance to have this conversation. Speak to that a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, Presentation Zen is it's something that we came across a few years ago when I was still working just with one part of the organization, National Account Services. And we were looking for a way to capture their attention and their interest in a way that was a little bit different, not just slides with a little image and a whole mess of bullets, but kind of simplifying
things. So you went a different way, huh?
Yeah, we did, yeah. So my manager at the time, Laura Davis, came across this book called Presentation Zen, and she's just one of those people with a voracious appetite for knowledge, and thought, hey, this might be a way to capture their attention in an unexpected way, not provide them the same thing over and over again. Going back to those obstacles you were talking about hard-headed salespeople and getting their attention. So what Presentation Zen is it's a way of uncluttering the information that you present, and through simplicity and clarity, just making things more understandable, putting on it on an emotional level so that they can respond on a deeper level and be willing to make the behavior change that's being asked of them.
Now, why do you think that so many presentations, like you were saying, just are typically heavy with bullets and text and just cramming every word in your brain onto those slides?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. And it probably the answer ranges from everything from we don't have a lot of time to do anything differently.
But it seems like that would take more time.
It actually takes a lot less time. Hey, if you've got spaghetti in a pot, throwing it up at the wall doesn't take a whole lot of time, right? But taking an idea and pulling out the strands of spaghetti that are really going to make the biggest impact, the real impactful ones, that
takes a little more.
It does take a lot more.
Speaking of impact, just so you know, Kevin just wrote down the spaghetti quote for the press release. So you're making an impact right here in the studio.
Yeah, well, not many companies these days have a ton of money to throw at training. They want to be really careful about what it is that they spend their budget on. Giving designers, giving project teams a little extra time to really think through what will really make the behavior change, that's a big obstacle to overcome for sure.
But that seems like you said before, that's the most impactful.
It is very impactful, but convincing people sometimes status quo, just gets in their way. It's what we've always done. We've always put up slides and there's a bunch of bullets and it shows that we have a lot of stuff to talk about.
That's right. Look how smart I am.
Look how important my message is.
600 slides.
There you go. Right.
As they're dozing off on slide 3.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So how does this work day to day? Does a line manager or a group of sales professionals or an individual sales professional come to you and say, hey, I need some help. Here's the outcomes that we want. And then you sit down and consult with them and then throw the instructional design machine methodology and people at it? Or is it, what are some ways that training comes together before you ever get to the point of executing it?
Yeah, well, we have someone in my organization who's in charge of hearing the needs of all of the business units. So you can imagine her door is very busy.
She just listens?
She just listens,
That's her job. Wow, what a great job.
Yeah, and then she assigns people when she thinks, yeah, this really makes sense for you. This might actually improve your business results. And one of the ways that we focus on things that will have the biggest impact is each business unit comes up with a list of things that they're focused on for the year, and they present it to us. And so when they come to us with a training request and they go to her door, they need to show how it is that it's going to affect those strategic results they're trying to drive.
So now when you're working with them and you create these presentations using this presentation Zen kind of methodology, is that something you're doing in training with the hopes of them using that within their businesses?
Not really. Really, we're focused on when we use this, and we can't use it with all business units because some of them are a little harder headed than others.
But you think it would work equally as well, but they're just a little slower to adopt this?
Yeah. You know, ADP it's a big cruise ship.
Right.
It's not a dinghy that you can push the paddle one time and turn.
Zipping around, right?
That's right. So sometimes it takes a little bit of.
You got to take your wins when you can get them, right?
Exactly.
And kind of magnify them as best you can.
And heck, you know, the leadership changes occasionally.
Right.
And when it does, we have a new opportunity to make inroads there.
There's a little bit of a wake. You got to kind of work around, right?
That's right. Big ship.
How do you go about getting your talent? And what I mean is the talent in the training arena, because you must have a pretty good idea now of the kind of people you need to pull this type of approach off. That's not your average Joe off the street trainer. Do you have a Zen approach to the recruiting for your training people?
Wow, that's way above my pay grade. I will say this, and this is what keeps me anchored to ADP. ADP somehow has found a magic formula. They hire some of the smartest, most talented, most interesting people that I've ever had a chance to work with, and they listen, and they're willing to work with me on my vision and help bring it to life. I just design. I do what I think is the easy part, right? I could do this day in, day out. But then I turn it over to a developer, and that's where the presentations then take shape, right, is the visuals. And we have lots of people on the team who are fabulous graphic designers and who can really take that vision.
So can you share like an example of how you would have come up with something, kind of put it through this presentation Zen machine, and then what's it look like at the end?
Yeah, so during the process of, you know, a project has been identified as having good business results if we achieve the goals that they want to accomplish, and we spend time doing the analysis, that's my part of the job. And I have to ask some really hard questions.
So you're going back to the people you're going to present to, and you're asking them.
There's a novel idea.
Right?
No, it makes so much sense, but it involves a lot of work, right?
Right.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you're getting it out of the horse's mouth, what the pains and challenges and opportunities are from them. Is that part of your process?
It is. And I really need to find the emotional impact, right? That's what all of this hinges on, is being able to find out where the pain really is and what it looks like for them. So if I'm working with small business services, the pain's going to look really different than it does.
So what's an example of a pain that you've kind of uncovered?
You know, knocking on the door over and over again and getting a no.
So just like that frustration and that, you know, kind of they get dejected and
they
lose kind of hope a little bit.
Sure. They develop call reluctance. Uh-huh. Right? Yeah. And you know, that's a completely different
challenge. That's a
challenge,
right? So that's a challenge for you. Now, how do you work this Zen magic to overcome that?
Well, you know, once we find out what that pain is and we've done a really good analysis, we often try to find out what does it look like when you face that pain and how do we make it sound real for them.
Right.
So we work with our subject matter experts, find out, you know, what that sounds like, you know, and start there. We want to start with what is it that's going wrong or where are the results not reaching the level that they could reach. And then we have to go through, you know, the behavioral processes. What is it that we need to change? You know, what do we have to look at differently? What's the behavior that we want to drive? And then it's a matter of that's always the spaghetti pot part of right. the, right? That's where they're like, well, this needs to happen, and this needs to happen, and this needs to happen.
Do you ever get this? We get this in our company. If only I had this.
The Bowflex, the 5000.
Right, we call it the Bowflex 5000. It's if I had the Bowflex 5000, then I could lose weight. You know, it's always like that thing, this device or this magic tool that if I had that, then I would be successful.
Sometimes, and I think even worse than that is, I just need the Bowflex 5000 and a good pair of running shoes, and I need a personal trainer, right. and I need, and so you're like, we've got 1 hour, dude. Right.
Yeah. It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Right. So trying to focus them on, all right, yeah, I know you want to do all of this in this 1 hour, but let's be realistic here. This is 1 hour of training. We can't put everything you've got, right. everything you've mm-hmm. ever learned into this one section, and trying to get them to focus on, well, which one's going to have the biggest impact.
Right.
That's a big challenge, especially with the sales leaders, because they want it now.
Right.
They want it now, and they want it exactly the way they want it. Actually, they want it yesterday. That's what we call at ADP, the speed of sales. It's actually yesterday is when this needed to be done.
So as an instructional designer, are you now having to also think through the medium? Because it could be classroom training, or I don't know, maybe their own devices, or the computer, the phone, the I don't know what all. Are you having to think through that too, right?
Yeah, and that's part of what we're going through with this consultative shift that we're trying to accomplish is right now they often have the vehicle in mind. They know that they...
When you say they, you're talking about the actual person who's getting trained?
No, the sales leaders.
The
sales leaders or the operations leaders, whoever mm-hmm. it is that's initiating the project. They often know, I'm going to put my guys in a room for eight... I say guys, but I mean it in the northern sense where right. it means both genders. But I'm going to put my people in a room for 8 hours. And in order to do that and justify the cost, we got to throw some training at them. So, you know, what have you got? You right. know, so we know, okay, great. We got classroom training. Go. And we want it yesterday. Right. right. Yeah.
Now, a great deal of this is supported by or maybe even inspired by some work from a couple of different fairly well-known authors, Daniel Pink and Gar Reynolds. Talk about that a little bit, because I know Pink talks about these right brain directed aptitudes. This is impacting this whole conversation, right?
Yeah. You know what? On the deepest level, and this is getting into an area where I have like a working knowledge, but on the deepest level, people have to make a choice when they're in a classroom, whether it's virtual classroom, whether it's, you know, in face-to-face, whether it's e-learning that they take asynchronously. They have to make a decision that my behavior needs to change. Otherwise, you can throw all the information at them that you know, anything that you can throw at them, it's not going to affect them. So on the deepest level, your primitive brain needs to be touched. And your primitive brain is the real decision maker. That's the one that says, oh, my God, there's a lion.
Fight or flight.
Fight or flight, right.
And that explains a lot of results from decisions I've made. Thank you for clearing that up.
Well, and telling stories and using these presentations and principles, you know, having simple images, having evoking emotion, giving examples instead of statistics, especially the storytelling, that all appeals to the primitive brain. And the primitive brain actually makes, in many cases, a lot better decisions than the not so primitive brain.
But and also, I would imagine they actually make decisions instead of just. Not deciding, you know, choosing not to decide.
Yeah,
I mean, which is kind of the worst decision, I think, a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah, and how many of us women at least can relate to standing in front of a closet and mm-hmm. you have 8,000 choices, you have to weigh everything. I mean, yeah, we don't walk out the door naked, mm-hmm. but we have to make a decision, and when you have too many choices, when you're working on that level, sometimes it's really hard to make a decision and to make change. And actually, that relates really well to what we do in sales, right?
Right.
Because what our companies that we're working with are facing is not just do we want ADP or do we want someone else, but do we really want change? Because right. change is scary.
Right,
because
they may be going from nothing to ADP.
That's true. In a lot of cases, they're going from something that's broken.
Right.
To ADP.
Right.
But justifying any change, it has to happen on the primitive brain level.
Right.
And this Gore Reynolds guy, he's real big on simple, isn't he? That's a big deal for him.
Yeah, I think that's why they named this presentation Zen, right? It has nothing to do with the actual.
You don't get beat
movement.
With a stick or anything if you screw up the role play, do you?
No. Well, they had talked about doing that at one point, but I think they've backed off. And fortunately, we're virtual, so they couldn't find stick wielders at each place in the country. Yeah. No, it is. It's all about the simplicity. If you think about, you know, what do you associate with the word Zen? Usually it's some like pool of water with ripples or a little small stack stones or, you know, some temple. It's all about uncluttering. It's right. all about simplicity. And it's about emotions and evoking emotions, getting rid of all of the stuff that distracts you so you can focus on what's important. That's what Zen masters do, right?
Right.
They're able to block out the rest of the world. And just focus on what it is right now that I really need to be focused on.
So now when you're rolling this stuff out and it's happening maybe virtually, is it something where you're leaning heavily on imagery and stories rather than just kind of droning talking?
Yeah, when it works best, it takes all of the elements that we have to do. It takes story. It takes the images. It humanizes.
So like you could have
elements.
A slide that might be, what's an example of a slide, like an image slide that you would use?
Well, you know, I think it's probably easier to answer that with what it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And what it isn't is the same image that you've always seen of two hands clasped over a globe.
Right. You're not going to see that?
Hopefully not.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. If everything went well in the process, then yeah, hopefully you'll see something that actually does evoke or click with the audience and make them think, yeah, I get that. And that gets down to the like deepest level, like certain colors evoke different emotions. And that's
when
a
you were dealing
challenge.
With, like you had mentioned earlier, like sales reluctance, like that fear and that apprehension, are you going to put an image up that kind of creates that fear and apprehension so they feel that when you're dealing with that issue?
If we can get buy-in that this is a good approach, and a lot of times I think a lot of executives shy away from poking at that fear too much.
Really?
Right?
So then the emotion you're trying to generate is more positive and more success-oriented rather than poking at maybe the fear that's holding them back?
Well, I'm pretty mean. so I like to poke the lion.
Right.
I think it's essential. Personally, I know that when I have to make a change, it takes a lot of poking for me, and I always think about that. I always put myself in their shoes. When I was in sales, when I had sales success myself, if someone had come up to me and said, okay, now I need you to totally redo the way that you do things to change with the marketplace, I'd have been in the same place. I'd have
right.
been shaking in my boots.
Right.
I'd have been like, this is my formula, and this works. So I believe in poking the lion. I believe in showing how much pain it is. I believe in drawing that part out as much as you can. And I have to balance with what, you know, where they want to tread.
Right. So in order to facilitate a change, you feel that the best way is then to kind of really dive deep into the fear part of it and then move them to the better path to the promised land on the other side?
I do think so. I think that's very important. And that's sort of a battle that's my own personal banner that I carry.
Right.
I mean, that's a battle that I try to wage, you know, and sometimes I bang my head against a brick wall there because nobody wants to step one of the barriers, sales egos. Nobody wants to step on that sales ego. It is a very nasty thing. Especially at higher levels of the organization. The younger salespeople in the smaller business units are the ones that work with younger salespeople, meaning newer to the business, not necessarily in age. They're more open to, you know, what is it that I need to know? They're hungry for
right.
it, right? But on the higher levels of the organization where the sales associates have
like,
had 30
I've already
years,
got this. I've got this figured out. Thank you very much, but that's not going to help me.
I got to tell you, it's a cold classroom when you're sitting in there and you look across the room and 50% of the people have their arms crossed over their chests and they're thinking about their grocery list. It can be difficult.
So how do you poke at them?
Yeah, role play, story, statistics, evidence. It's a combination of things, and something different works for everybody. So
right.
we try a little bit.
So you
got to
have a lot of tools in your toolbox.
A lot of tools, because it's something different for everybody. Yeah.
But all of those things that you're talking about apparently work better than just the pure spoken word, simply focused on the facts. That seems to be like the least effective, right?
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is fax is appealing to that newer part of the brain, not the primitive brain. And I think if everything works well, you're actually appealing to both parts, the primitive part that's optimal, right? I do think so, because our salespeople are smart people, very smart people. And they would recognize the tactic if you try to sneak around to that primitive part. Yeah, and they would put those barriers up on the other side. They're like little ninjas, you know. What? You're coming at me from this angle. What? I got you on that side too.
Well, and in that role playing, do you find, and maybe you even build it in on purpose, but I was wondering if you find that it just happens organically, that at some point in that kind of environment, they even start to train each other a little bit and learn from each other as well?
We do that on purpose a lot, especially with the business units that do have those tenured associates. They're brilliant at what they do. That's why ADP hired them. They're the big guns, and certain people are better in certain areas. And whenever possible, in those parts of the business unit, facilitation is actually used a lot more than training.
Uh-huh.
I just got done with 8 hours of instructor-led training, and 2 hours of it is instruction. 6 hours is facilitation, because they know it.
So what's an example of facilitation?
Asking questions to find out, uncover what they already know, how that would work, how that would sound.
And so you role play scenarios, and do you bring actual like customers in and have them do it, or it's all hypothetical situations?
Lord, I wish we could do that. No, we do it based on hypothetical. We often pair them up with other people in the classroom who can play. They've faced enough customers across right. the table. They play a customer
the tough customer.
Oh, they're mean.
Or the gatekeeper that's not letting them in.
Yeah, exactly. And our facilitators are all salespeople too. So
right.
they have lots of sales success and sales experience in their bag. And so they can play a CFO mm-hmm. of an organization. And boy, when they do, they take on that persona, and they're tough on them.
They probably really enjoy being tough, right?
A little payback, right?
Yeah. Most of the ones that I like love to be mean.
So what are you doing when these role-playing scenarios are happening?
I love to sit in the classroom and watch those barriers crumble. I love to watch the arms come out across the chest right. and go down into their lap and become more receptive. And I look for things, particular clues that overcome those barriers so that I can dig at those some more. Whenever possible, I try to see what happens in the classroom, but we deliver globally. So
right.
they won't send me to Shanghai for some
They won't?
No.
Not yet. Soon.
Not yet.
Well, I mean, it just comes through in shining colors. You really enjoy your work, don't you?
I do love my work. I absolutely do, yeah.
What, do you have a story maybe you can share of something that was really rewarding that you were able to help kind of make a change on somebody maybe that was underperforming that you help kind of get them to perform? Or
well, I don't get to be in front of the classroom very often, but ADP, it's been a couple of years now, adapted to a new sales thought. And this is actually a really important sales thought. And that is, you can't wait for a customer to identify that they have a need.
Mm-hmm.
That actually, if you get in front of the sale and point out to them how they could work their company a little bit differently, what they could accomplish if they were to do that. And I was in a classroom when they first started to present this, and I was instrumental in creating 8 hours of in-person instructor-led training, and I was fortunate enough that they ran it here in Atlanta. And I watched those arms across the chests. And there was one guy in particular who he had a lot of sales success. And I could see that the idea of this, right from the beginning, had piqued his interest.
Right, like he's intrigued.
But
he's now trying to figure out how it can really work in the real world, not your theoretical world.
Yeah, and you know, that making it happen thing was, I figured out later on, was the biggest reason those arms would not uncross. He was like, I get this. I get that that would really make a huge impact, but how can I personally find out enough about an organization and how they do business to actually tell them how to do their business differently?
Right.
And at the time, organizationally, we were not structured to support that. And over the last couple of years, we have actually, through the rest of sales operations, not just learning, really made strides into helping the salespeople connect with those things that will help them to be able to accomplish that. And man, watching those arms slowly come across that
right.
chest, and then he started to stand up
wow.
and participate. And that's always an exciting process because I realized when he left the room, he was aware of what the barriers were, but very explicitly. It wasn't a murky, unknown barrier to him anymore. So he was charged up and he knew what he could do to overcome these obstacles that still existed. And he knew that the organization still had some turning around to do, but he also had hope that that would actually happen. He understood that the organization was that ADP cruise boat was turning slowly, but
he had to fight through that scar tissue of, maybe some past experiences.
Yeah, I won't name names marketing, but yeah, he had occasionally faced obstacles in the past with not getting the kinds of information that lit fires under his customers and made sure that they didn't end in status quo, because status quo is actually the scariest decision to a salesperson. Right. Nobody likes to lose to the competition, but when they lose to status quo,
it's like
they knew they didn't build the value.
Right. You had a shot, but they didn't pick you. You know, they stayed where they were. That's like
worse. They picked the pain that there are. They're standing on needles, and you've pointed it out, and they'd rather have needles than you.
I'd rather have that.
Yeah, it's like the dating thing, right? Yeah. Like, oh, you picked what now over me? What's wrong with me? Yeah. And salespeople, to go along with those egos, they also have a great deal of that shyness. They really want to be picked. They're out there. They're wooing
that
people.
Need, right.
Yeah. Pick me.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's bring Leanne Langford with Training Pros into this conversation. She's been sitting there very politely and nodding her head. Are you learning anything over there on that side of the table?
Yes, I'm learning about presentations, and I'm learning that she is just hilarious. I'm having the best time listening to this conversation.
So what's going on in your world?
Oh, you know, Training Pros is just still out there working with our customers, bringing them great instructional designers. Wish we had Jenna, but she's employed.
That's right. You got a fallback here.
That's awesome. I'm writing your number down.
But no, you work with a lot of instructional designers, and you got to be looking for the kinds of characteristics and traits that you see when you're hanging out with Jenna, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we do look for all types of instructional designers, but I can tell when I'm looking through, you know, we always meet with our instructional designers and look at their work and sample their work. And when I see somebody who has a lot of visuals in their instructional design and it's not just a bunch of bullet points and text, I know immediately which clients that I want to propose these folks to. So,
right.
Yeah.
Is that because some clients are more receptive to doing things in a different way than
every
others?
Client has a different style that they like to work with, and we try to match up our instructional designers with the clients that are the best suited to their style. So we do have some designers who are more text-based, and we have clients who prefer things that are more text-based. So we will match those two up. But when we have clients that love things that are done visually, you have to find that designer who is a visually based instructional designer and draws on that emotion and does things in that way.
Mm-hmm. So how does your thing work on the front end? Do you guys have some sort of consulting period where you're thinking through all of these topics before you start building some sort of ideal profile, or what does that cycle look like?
Wow, that's a hard question.
Or you don't do any of that. You just pick up the phone and somebody says, get me one of these and two of these, and you say yes.
Well, we get to know our clients, and we get to know what their end product looks like and their work style and their culture in their company. And based on that, when they do give us that phone call and say, hey, we do need an instructional designer, we'll ask them a bunch of questions, you know, to find out the skill set needed. But we also try to do a good culture match based on all of the instructional designers we've sat down with face-to-face to meet, and along with work style match with what skill sets and what type of output they're looking for. So it's kind of a subjective process, but it works for us because, you know, just getting to know people personally has worked really well to get people matched up.
Now, when you're matching up a trainer, do you ever have to train the trainer a little bit to get them kind of better at, say, this presentation Zen thing? If they knew a little bit about it, can you help them kind of improve a little, or do you kind of take them the way they are?
Yes, we don't train our
There's
consultants.
No training, so you take them the way they are.
Yeah, they have to have a certain level of professionalism
right, before
and a
you
certain
even consider
years
them
before they're considered. Right. If they come to us and they have 6 months experience, we're like, here's some ways you can get some experience. Call us in a few years, you know.
But you might tell them to listen to this interview or read the Daniel Pink book or something before you send them over to Jenna. Right? Look, let me tell you something. You got to get schooled up on this piece of it. They might be very technically competent in whatever they need, but you're going to prepare them for that conversation.
Absolutely. I'll prepare them for the conversation, but I'm not going to send them in if they're not already leaning in that way. And other things I'll do, of course, is send them to ASTD for some professional development. So there's all kinds of ways that we will help the folks who aren't ready for it. But when we send them to a to like an ADP, we would send them a person
who is already fully baked,
who's going to come in and know what they're doing. They're not going to come in and need training the first day. They're going to know what to do.
How are things going over at the ASTD? Aren't you kind of easing out of one of your leadership slots, and so maybe you have a little more time available?
I am so happy. Yes, I am. I have done 3 years now on the board, and I'm in the little tailspin on that. And actually, in a couple weeks, I'm headed to Washington, D.C. to do the ASTD Leadership Conference.
Oh, wow.
And I get to actually teach a class there. So I'm excited. And so I'm trying to use presentations in to make it a better presentation, because those...
I know a person you can talk to.
We have a good referral for you.
Yeah. So that's a lot of fun. And then after that, I'm slowly transitioning my role in marketing over to Sarah, who you've had on your show.
Right.
And I get to step out of that and into a really easy role now.
You're always looking for easy, huh?
She's earned it.
Yes.
So you have any experience with this ASTD outfit or other professional associations? You guys keep to yourselves mostly?
Actually, quite a few of our designers are part of our ASTD. I personally am not, but that's because I have a full boat already. I do so much already every day, and most of that involves a soccer field personally. So.
I've been there.
He's a cheer mom. Or former cheer mom.
That's right. Now I'm a gymnastics mom.
Nice.
But no, these professional associations can be a fantastic place to tap resources and network. And so I suspect some of your team probably really get a lot out of that.
Yeah. And ASTD always offers great resources for those of us who aren't true members of them. But yeah.
So Presentation Zen is on your must-read book list, right?
I think so. And it is geared to every presentation. It's not just about – it's actually not about training. It's about every presentation. But anything that you can tell a story with, that's where this fits.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a great fit in the training world for, product training. You insert – slot A into tab B, that's not a great fit for this. But even with that kind of training where you're just giving a product update, there's always an opportunity to prime the field first by telling a bit of a story.
Right.
Talking about, proposing what life is going to be like now that they've made things hopefully easier with the next rollout of product. And exploring that in the form of story is a great fit. So.
And then when you're saying stories, you're talking about actual examples from their real-life work world?
It could be examples from their real-life work world. Hey, it could be posing what if, mm-hmm. The imagination is a very powerful thing. And hopefully, especially in the sales field, you've got to believe in your product. You have to believe in your company's ability to follow through with the things that you're promising your clients that you can do. So in my world, it makes perfect sense to propose what if, for your customers and really get excited about what's coming.
So I want to get this Gar Reynolds guy on the show sometime. Can we tell him that we talked to you first? Would that help us?
Have you had them speak at your place and you learn directly from them?
No, actually, I have never had the opportunity to meet Gar. I would be very interested to meet him. I like the way he thinks. I like this. I like the way his brain works. It's pretty amazing. And he's full of really great ideas, I think.
Well, when he swings through Atlanta, which I'm sure he does, we ought to get you back on here and have you both talk about this.
Thank you.
Would you be up for that?
Yeah.
Put
my name down. Yeah. I'll tell them about what it looks like in work. Yeah.
You
in the
got
workplace.
It. Well, this has been an absolute delight having you come in to visit with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks. I was glad to be here.
And Leanne, thanks so much for coordinating this. This is fantastic.
It was a pleasure.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our producer, Kevin Finn, and our guest this morning, Mrs. Jenna Kay, and of course, Leanne Langford, and everyone here at the Business Radio X Studio. Saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights.